Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Prospect Podcast, where today we're taking stock of last week's election results and asking, what can they really tell us about the coming general election? I'm Ellen Halliday, Deputy Editor at Prospect, and I'm joined for this episode by expert pollster Peter Kellner, who has decades of experience analysing elections and is currently writing a weekly politics column for Prospect, in which he dives into the polls and tells us what we can and can't learn from them. So, Peter, welcome back to the podcast.
Great to be here, Ellen.
So, now the dust has somewhat settled on the local elections and mayoral elections from last week, we know that it was the worst result for the Conservatives in 40 years, and Labour might be feeling boosted by some wins. So did it go as you expected?
Yes, broadly. This sounds very boastful, but I did say I thought Sadiq Khan would win London comfortably, but not by a landslide. That's what happened. The West Midlands will be close. That Ben Hutchins would hold on in Tees Valley. I think my proudest claim is that I did say Labour might take York and North Yorkshire, which is a very, very, very Tory part of England, Rishi Sunak's home territory, but where Labour had won a sensational by-election a few months ago. And I thought there was an outside chance of Labour taking that very Tory part of Yorkshire, and it did.
So no great shocks for you, but a positive result for Labour with a significant sort of swing, really. I mean, can you remind us of that broad outcome?
Roughly speaking, when you convert the local election results as if people in those areas were voting in a general election, and you look at the ups and downs area by area since 2019, it amounts to roughly a 10% swing from Conservative to Labour compared with 2019. That is a big swing. The last general election where we had a swing of that size was the Blair landslide in 1997. On its own, if it was happening in every seat, it doesn't actually quite give Labour a majority, but perhaps we'll come on to that a bit later, because in reality, when you look below the surface, Labour did very well and is on course for a majority.
So, I mean, what do we know about why there was that swing? What are the reasons for those shifts in some of these constituencies where it may have been a surprise?
The biggest single factor is the Conservatives are very unpopular. Rishi Sunak, when he became Prime Minister, started off with OK ratings. And the big question then is, his ratings were OK. The Conservative Party's ratings were terrible. Would he pull the Tory Party up, or would the Tory Party drag him down? Well, it's far more of the second than the first. His ratings have tumbled. They're still slightly better than the Tories. But basically, his ratings have tumbled towards those of the Tory Party. And what you see around the country is the Conservatives doing very badly. The two exceptions are the mayoral elections in Tees Valley and in the West Midlands, when you had Tory incumbents who basically concealed the fact that they were Tories. It wasn't a great public secret, but they didn't put it on their leaflets, and they didn't wear the rosettes, and they made it clear they were seeking a personal vote, not a party vote. And although Andy Street lost in the West Midlands, he did much better than you would generally expect for the Conservatives in the West Midlands. And Ben Houchen did substantially better, even though his vote was down on last time. He did substantially better than the Tories would generally do in the Tees Valley if there were now a general election.
Yeah, and I mean, that victory for Ben Houchen will be one of the positive stories that the Conservatives will be leaning on, I guess.
We had the Tees Valley result, I think, about lunchtime on Friday, and Rishi Sunak dashes up and embraces Ben Houchen. It looks quite awkward with the embrace, because he's... don't think his relationship with Rishi Sunak is that good. And the Tories were clearly hoping that they would, that come Saturday, when we got the West Midlands results, they would score a double victory and that Andy Street would hold on. And on Friday evening, I think pretty well everybody locally, both Labour and Conservative, thought Andy Street would just hold on, but he didn't. And we now know that Richard Parker, for the Labour Party, just scraped home by 1,500 votes out of more than 500,000 votes cast.
So Rishi Sunak, since that election, has been claiming that the Tories might be on course to kind of deprive Labour of a majority, that maybe we'll see a hung parliament. What do you make of that narrative that Sunak's putting forth?
It's worth starting with the history of this. As it happened, I was watching Sky News on Saturday morning when Michael Thrasher, their in-house expert and one of the great experts in Britain on local elections. Michael Thrasher is an academic. He pairs up with a man called Colin Ralling, and they're the two academics who know more about local elections than anybody else. But he's also Sky's sort of in-house election expert. And he said that if you take Labour's national equivalent lead, it was not enough to give Labour an outright majority if it were repeated in every seat across the country, and that on that basis we were heading for a hung parliament. However, Michael went on to say this is simply a statistical exercise. It leaves out all sorts of things. It leaves out the fact there were no elections last week in Scotland, where Labour is doing really well compared with 2019. It leaves out all the evidence of tactical voting, of which there's a lot, and the Tories suffering badly. It leaves out the evidence that Michael himself produced on Sky, that the Tories are doing much worse in Leave, the areas that voted Leave in the Brexit referendum, which is where a lot of the seats they're defending are to be found. If you take that into account, they would lose more seats than you'd expect on that sort of purely mechanical calculation. Yeah. But Rishi Sunak and the Tories leapt upon the first statement and ignored the qualifications.
I'd love to hear a bit more about what we know about tactical voting and how we're so confident that that's what was going on in this election.
Again, let's start with a little bit of history. In 1997, when Tony Blair was leading the Labour Party, Paddy Ashton, the Liberal Democrats, a great many voters, if they were Liberal Democrat, were quite happy to vote for Tony Blair, and if they were Labour, to vote for Paddy Ashton's party. And the academic analysis suggested the Conservatives lost something like an extra 30 seats because of tactical voting than they would have lost anyway. Labour picking up 20, the Lib Dems about 10. Tactical voting disappeared off after that, very little in 2019, because Jeremy Corbyn didn't have the same cross-party appeal as Tony Blair, or indeed Joe Swinson, the Lib Dem leader, as Paddy Ashton. But there have been increasing signs that it's come back. If you look at the parliamentary by-elections the last couple of years, what you notice, something very fascinating about the Lib Dems, in every by-election bar one, they've either won the seat or got less than 10%. So people were deserting them where they had no chance, but flocking to them where they had a chance of victory. That's tactical voting for you. And again, where they were, figures were slumping, where it was a Labour-Tory battle, then Labour was doing extremely well. So that's the backdrop. Now, what the BBC found, crunched the numbers on Friday, was that there was a bigger swing from Conservative to above average, significantly above average swing to Labour in those wards where Labour was challenging the Tories. They came second last time to the Tories. But where the Lib Dems were second last time to the Tories, there was a big swing to the Lib Dems. And then I was looking at the London results. Now, you know, everyone is talking about the London mayor, and that's clearly the big story, but Londoners had three votes last Thursday. One was for mayor, one was for their local sort of block of constituencies for a local representative on the London Assembly, and the other was for the London Assembly as a whole proportional vote. Now, in South West London, you've got three Lib Dem MPs. They're not the only MPs in the area, but it is clearly an area where the Lib Dems are fighting the Tories in that part of London. Now, if there were no tactical voting, you would expect the way people voted in South West London in the mayoral election to be the same as in, if you like, the semi-local assembly election. That is not what happened. Amongst the same voters in South West London, Labour did far better when people were voting for mayor than when people were voting for their local assembly representative. Mm-hmm. And the Lib Dems did massively better on the local vote than on the mayoral vote. This tells me, and it's a great, if you like, social science experiment, more than 100,000 voters with separate votes on the same day, showing that people, in a big way, were deciding where to place their anti-Tory cross on the ballot paper.
Which perhaps is a good moment to bring us to reform. In a way, reform has also had a positive story to tell from this election. Do you think tactical voting is an ally for reform in the upcoming general election?
That's a really interesting question. The reform did not quite as well as they'd hoped in the Blackpool South by-election. They just failed to come second. They just failed to overtake the Tories. They're hoping to overtake the Tories. And they didn't fight all that many seats in the council elections. But where they did stand, then, again, the BBC analysis is that the Tories did much worse in those wards where reform was standing than in the wards where reform was not standing. And this bears out polling data I've written about for Prospects a few weeks ago, that whereas UKIP a decade ago were taking votes all over the place, from Labour, from the Lib Dems, from Tories, whatever, reform are almost exclusively taking ex-Tory votes. They're damaging the Tories. One then says, OK, in a general election, will reform be the real spoilers that will hurt the Tories? Reform are going to win no seats or hardly any seats themselves. The impact is whether they take seats away from the Tories in Tory marginal seats and therefore turn what would otherwise be a Tory hold into a Tory loss. Broadly speaking, the better reform does in the general election, the worse the Tories will do. But again, if one looks at what was happening in London last week, people were voting reform. I think they were getting on for 10%, 8 or 10%. Mm-hmm. When asked for the assembly-wide, in fact, the PR bit of the London election. But that was halved when they were voting for mayor. So it looks as if the Tories were clawing reform votes back when it was clearly a Labour-Tory contest. So my expectation would be that the reform vote will be squeezed between now and the general election. And if it is squeezed, the Tories will claw back some of the big deficits they've got against Labour. But the biggest, if you like, known unknown about the next few months is Nigel Farage, because the polling evidence is that Nigel Farage personally has quite a big following. And if he decides to come back in a big way and campaign for reform in the general election, then I think reform will do a lot better and the Tories a lot worse than if Nigel Farage stays in Washington. And I bet you the Tories are hoping that he'll stay with Donald Trump and not come back to London.
After the break, we'll talk more about Labour's triumphant locals and what Sunak might do next. But first, I'd like to tell you about how you can get Peter's writing and all Prospect journalism right in your hand. Take out a digital subscription to Prospect and enjoy a 1 month free trial to our digital content. You'll immediately get full access to rigorously fact-checked, truly independent analysis and perspectives. There's no commitment and you can cancel at any time. To take advantage of this offer, visit our website or go to your favourite search engine and search for Prospect Magazine subscription.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
That threat from reform has been a big worry within the Tories and has led to a lot of Tory MPs sort of asking questions about Sunak, you know, and is he the strong leader, the right leader for, you know, to take the party into the election? Do you think that Sunak's position has changed before and after this election? His sense of his confidence?
Gosh, I'm not sure I can see into his sort of post-local election soul. He's smart enough to know that when he's been going around saying we're heading for hung parliament, that's nonsense. I mean, he knows that. And indeed, I think it is a sign of the weakness of the Tory position that the best they can do is offer an analysis which is easily dismantled. But what he will do now, and that's clearly where the battle inside the Tory party is. I think prospect of a challenge to his leadership in the next few days or weeks has gone away. But you are now getting this argument between the old One Nation Tories, people like Damien Green, who was Deputy Prime Minister a few years back, saying, don't go to the right, stay in the centre. Andy Street, mm-hmm. having just lost the first minutes, he made the same point. They'd be mad to go to the right. And then you've got people like Suella Braverman, for example, writing the Sunday Telegraph, I think it was, saying we need Sunak to become a real Conservative because we're losing ground because we're not real Conservatives. I would say two things. Firstly, is that if I had to choose, as an outside advisor, whether to go to the centre or go to the right, I'd say go to the centre. But the second thing is that I'm not sure either will make much difference. And let me give an example of this on the lessons to be drawn. Is that if you look, as YouGov and others have been in recent weeks, at how the parties are doing on different subjects, do you know where the Conservatives are doing worst? The issue on which the Conservatives have the worst rating. It's not the health service, you're reminded, it's immigration. This is the party which thinks that immigration is its issue, but it's not. Disenchantment with the Tories on immigration, including amongst people who voted Conservatives in 2019, is huge. Now, when people are asked about the idea of the Rwanda scheme, it's the country's sort of 50-50. It's not, you know, the country is divided, but there's not a majority dislike of the Rwanda scheme. The Tories' problem is not whether the policy is a good idea, it's whether it will work. Mm-hmm. And so if there was one thing that Sunak needs to achieve to start to claw ground back, it is to make the Rwanda scheme work. If people come the autumn, have come to the conclusion it's not working or it's not having effect or it's not stopping the boats or whatever, and immigration's still a mess, then I think he's completely stuffed. But if the planes do take off in numbers, and if we start to see a real drop, and this is the key test, a real drop in the boats crossing the channel, then he'll start to have a story to tell, which might win back some of the votes he's lost.
There were rumours in recent weeks about an election being called sooner rather than later. That hasn't obviously come to pass, so those may just have been ill-founded rumours. But do you think, therefore, that he's going to wait and wait and wait until the last minute to call it to see if something does show up?
And then you, as you said in a very delicate way, I've been around for a long time. And in the month leading up to every general election I remember, you start to get speculation as to when it will be called, and people saying it'll be held soon, when all objective evidence is that it won't be held soon. We're just going through one of those. There'll be an early election only if the Tory party implodes. If Rishi Sunak is still leader and surviving within his party and is within his control, then he'll wait till the autumn, possibly the late autumn. I wouldn't be completely surprised if we don't have another December election, but November, or it'll be November or December. But you know, perhaps one of the great lessons of the last week, not only just over the time of the election, but over what happened in London, is don't believe the Twitterati. There was that spate of rumours on Friday that Sadiq Khan had lost in London. It was nonsense. It was always nonsense. I have this cynical suspicion that it was people in the Labour Party who were putting it about, so that when he won, it looked like a great triumph. You know, Sadiq Khan's figures in holding London were not as great as they should be. London is a strongly Labour city, and he won comfortably, but not overwhelmingly. But after the Friday scare stories, it looked like a tremendous victory. So whoever was behind the Twitterati, they did the public interest a bad service, they did Sadiq Khan a good service.
I'm really glad you brought that up, because that's been puzzling me. It's, as you say, across the country, when you looked at the kind of support for Labour, London is a Labour city, you think Sadiq Khan would have it in the bag. And then there was this kind of wobble where people thought, oh, maybe it's going to be a really close race. And there were a couple of polls that maybe suggested his lead was narrower than it should have been. Were those helpful, or did those kind of divert us?
Those of us who follow polls will remember that in 2021, the last mayoral election, which Sadiq Khan quite narrowly, the polls ahead of it overstated it. And they said the Tories did quite a lot better than the pre-election polls. So in as far as there was any sense in the suggestion that Sadiq Khan might be in trouble, it was based on the idea that the polls, for some systematic reason, overstate Labour support and understate Tory support in London. Now, there's one poll, YouGov, my old company, that did in its final poll have a much, much bigger Sadiq Khan lead. But there were other polls, I think by Savanta and by Redfield and Wilton, which were pretty close in terms of the margin of victory. So the pollsters in general had a pretty good election. But the truth of the matter is that London, if there were a general election now, Labour would be around 50% or a bit over. The Tories would be around 25%. And what you got in the event was Sadiq Khan, I think, got 44% and Susan All, the Conservatives, 33%. So Sadiq Khan unquestionably underperformed Labour's underlying strength, and Susan Hall overperformed the Conservatives' underlying strength.
That's really interesting. So in the next few months, as we do come up to the eventual general election date, obviously there will be a lot of, you know, comment, analysis, rumour. How do we make sure that we're focusing on evidence based in reality and in science rather than this kind of Twitterati discourse?
You're tempting me to say, read my blogs on prospects. But I'm a modest fellow, so I'll leave that for others to judge. And indeed, there are other people. Mark Pack, who's the president of the Liberal Democrats, but is I'm not sure if this is his job or his hobby, does a really good weekly blog, comes out every Sunday evening. And if you Google Mark Pack, and he does a really good service just reporting, rounding up the week's polls and pointing out, you know, where what one should deduce and what one should not deduce from them. And there are other people, Rob Ford, a Manchester academic who writes for The Observer. There are a number of people around, so there's no excuse for getting it badly wrong. But of course, people don't need an excuse to get things wrong. They need some kind of incentive, or combined with ego, to say things which are sometimes ridiculous.
Okay, well, we'll make sure that we're sticking to those verified sources over the next few months. But Peter, thank you very much for bringing your analysis. It's been lovely to chat with you again.
I've enjoyed the telling. Thank you.
That's all for now. Thanks so much to Peter for joining us, and thanks to our listeners at home for tuning in. If you enjoyed this podcast, then head to our website at prospectmagazine.co.uk or to our app, where you can read Peter's regular election countdown column and everything from our latest magazine, including Nick Davies' shocking investigation into new evidence that's come to light about phone hacking by Rupert Murdoch's newspapers. See you next time.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Flimsy stands slowing you down? Well, it's time to upgrade. Armadillo builds durable, North American-made tablet stands and kiosks. We're so confident, we offer a lifetime warranty. So, elevate your business and visit armadillo.com. That's armodillo.com and use code ACAST for 5% off. Armadillo, built to last, designed to impress.